Padres Hot Tub is brought to you by the Padres Hot Tub Patreon community, growing by leaps and bounds. We do a segment, Chris Reed, every week on our Banter podcast, exclusive to our patrons, where we thank our new patrons for showing up. And I mean, we had to go like record a whole separate segment. It was a long segment today.
I know we're adding new podcasts every week now, Craig, to the network, as it were. But it may have to be its own show in itself. Not just reading out names for 30 minutes. It really warms the heart and, just makes me happy for all these folks to join up, get access to the Discord, a place that surprises and, you know, brings joy just about every week. Now we're neck deep in our fantasy season. You just oh, drafted a Cub.
I just did two draft picks in between podcasts. We've actually got five different fantasy drafts all taking place simultaneously on our Padres Hot Tub Discord. That's the level of engagement we have. Never mind the fact that in addition to Padres Hot Tub, Banter, Have a Drink, it's Chris's week for Have a Drink, Rafi's new podcast, Pods Above Replacement, coming to you 48 hours before their main feed. You get first access to all of our events that we do. Big patrons and huge patrons get the chance to go to ball games and other events with Chris and even to host episodes of Padres Hot Tub coming up. So we've got all kinds of benefits. Just go check it out. Go to patreon.com/PadresHotTub, patreon.com/PadresHotTub. For just $5 a month, you can jump on into the tub. Welcome to the Padres Hot Tub, everybody. Craig Elston, Chris Reed, Rafi Cantor coming your way. This is one of our spring training traditions here on Padres Hot Tub. It's time for the worst case scenarios. It's time to bring out all the Eeyores, all the doom and gloom. It's time for the pessimism podcast. This is part of our three podcast trilogy. This week, Chris, worst case scenarios. Next week, best case scenarios. And then 2 weeks from now, we will offer our official win-loss predictions for 2023.
This is where the rubber meets the road. The season is less than a month away, less than 4 weeks away. We're staring down the barrel of it. And I can't wait, Craig. I put on my... I think this is the 2016 batting practice cap for the pessimism episode. Just trying to get me in the right headspace. Remember what we've seen?
Literal headspace. Trying to think, like, in 2016, who are, okay, all right, so, like, we got some BJ Upton action taking place. We're in a bleak spot.
Padres are taking
out guys.
Yeah, they've taken a huge swing that did not make any contact whatsoever.
Did Travis Jankowski pan out? Let's figure it out. The answer is no.
yeah. It is when you're using him as a proxy for Shohei Ohtani in a fantasy league, which we currently are.
That's amazing. In one of in the league that you're not in, Chris, they used Hosmer.
Oh, no.
And I literally thought somebody as a joke picked Eric Hosmer at the end of the first round. I'm like, what are you doing?
It's disgusting.
Commitment to the bit? No, it's a proxy for Shohei. I got it. Okay. So we're going to get into all of our worst case scenarios in just a moment. First, in the news, some things that could contribute to a worst case scenario. You will hear me say it until I am shaken off the opinion, which will be never. I'll die before I stop saying it. Wins and losses in spring training don't matter. There are only losses. The losses are injuries. If you have injuries, you lose. every day you don't have an injury in spring training, you win and stack them up as follows. And you hope for a perfect spring. It almost never happens. And Adrian Morejon has left his last outing. He's got tightness in the elbow and forearm. And I am very worried about Adrian Morejon and honestly, his major league career.
Yeah, dude. Someone in the Discord said he's the Cuban Todd Van Poppel, and they may have nailed it a little too hard. You know, that's kind of the worst case for any young phenom pitcher. And I really hope that, you know, Adrian is not living that, but it's hard to, I mean, he's in a battle for a spot on the team as it is. You know, there's not a lot of margin for error. So any missed time, if he has to begin the season on the IL, it's not great for him. And then if it's the worst case, it's hard to see where he goes from here. So fingers crossed, it's not that latter one.
Yeah, you don't want to see it. This is an all-in year for the Padres. We're done with, you know, hey, this is a kid that we picked in 2016 and we believe in him and we've backed him. We've got a lot of shares of his stock and all of that. Like, if Adrian Morejon can't contribute, Adrian Morejon's going to be gone. And here's the thing. I think there was a level of acceptance coming into the spring saying, well, you know what? If Drew Pomeranz is completely unable to help this team again, it doesn't really matter. We've got Adrian Morejon, and Morejon's the guy who can be that bridge power lefty reliever. Now, the simulated game coming up for Drew Pomeranz, he continues to express some optimism that he'd be available to start the regular season. The regular season's basically 3 weeks away. And I don't know. I don't think he's going to be available. If he is, it's going to be, you know, what, an outing every third game or something. But right now, his name just went up the depth chart if Morejon's going on the IL.
It would be a blow, man, because the Padres face some uncertainty in the back of the rotation with Martinez and Lugo. They don't know how deep those guys are going to go on a weekly basis. They really need a two-inning power arm. You know, Nabil's going to eat some innings for sure this year, but they really wanted somebody with some heat, and having Adrian not be there is going to be a bummer. Pomeranz, they have a lot to lose by rushing him out. I can't imagine how badly Drew Pomeranz wants to pitch for the Padres. You know, I'm sure it's something that weighs heavy on him. But it's just like Joe Musgrove. Like, let's not rush back. The season won't be lost in April, you know?
Well, you brought him up. Joe Musgrove threw off a mound, is able to put on cleats. He's wearing, according to Kevin Acey's reporting, a left shoe two sizes too big.
W16s.
Right? He said his pain was a 2 out of 10 because they've completely removed the nail off of his big toe, which is gross.
You gotta love those details. Super gross. Reporting.
Yeah. Are you... Then do you wrap it? Is it a moleskin situation? Do you have to let that area air out? Like
Musgrove told reporters, they grabbed it with tweezers and slowly began to pull.
Right.
They gave it a solid pull, but there was still a fair bit of nail left onto the tender skin at the back of his foot.
I hate you right now so much. So gross. Terrible.
That's practically right. What AC wrote, man.
Joe still did not give up the location of Seidler's secret Playboy hang. So, where is Seidler's secret dugout? I'll never tell!
We can do this one of two ways. The easy way or the hard way.
My pain threshold is 10 out of 10. Oh my God. So, yeah, Joe Musgrove. Look, you can go back and listen to the last show. You can listen to my Have a Drink with Will Carroll. Bones heal. They don't, you can't, it doesn't change based on what flavor LaCroix you're drinking, okay? Like, bones heal at the rate that bones heal.
No, bro, so, this is pamplemousse. I'm good to go, Bob.
You know, there's the chance of him hurting himself by doing this, even if it's, I want to be clear about this, even if it's 2%, why?
Well, I thought
why?
I thought it was interesting that Bowmel said he's coming back to San Diego to get on, you know, some imaging machine that will let them know if he is compensating, if his delivery has been altered. I wonder how accurate such things are. I mean, there has to involve like scales. I know when I worked at Roadrunner Sports, we told people that we were, you know, we're giving them their custom fitted insole, and you know, we just kind of stood behind them and watched while they walked, and that was the science. I mean, oh yeah, no, you definitely need this Nike. It's where you're at. So like,
well, but the honest question would be like, is there somebody that's willing to stand up and say, no, Joe, you aren't throwing properly. You are in danger of a cascade injury. Is that Ruben Niebla? Is Ruben Niebla expected to stand up? Is it the head athletic trainer? Is it whoever the hell plugs this machine in? They trust to set the readings? Like
Joe's just staring furiously, all 6'4" of him on the other side of the room. Yeah. Like, what does it say?
And the Padres have a Rafe in the corner going, no, you really shouldn't pitch. He's like, shut up, Rafe. I'm going to pitch. You're not going to tell me. You know, so, yeah, I'm concerned about that. I don't want to concern troll the whole thing, but I'll just repeat what we said last week and said on group therapy too. The chance of coming back, thinking you're doing something perfectly fine and screwing it up and having the excuse machine say, oh, no, he's fine. And like, remember in March when they checked his mechanics, he's fine. And that'll be the talking point that everyone uses and writes. It doesn't mean that he couldn't still change his mechanics and hurt himself. And I just don't care if he misses four starts. It's like Tatis is going to miss four starts, so to speak. You know, like, it's fine. Get well, bones heal. Let's do it the right way.
I'm with you, man. I don't think if they do an extended spring training into the middle of April, they're going to come out of that with, you know, anything worse than a 500 record. So then you get your full strength back, you know, with 4/5 of the season left. Let's ride.
All right. Now I want to play a little bit with some of the puzzle pieces we have here, because we've got Adrian Morejon heading out. Drew Pomeranz, not yet in. Trying to weasel his way back in. But I think if you told me that there was going to be a Drew Pomeranz IL stint to begin the season so that he could build up his arm and build up his ability to come back, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. Then you get what we heard from Bob Melvin talking about Jay Groom. Jay Groom has gotten to around 11 innings. It's like 10 and two-thirds innings or somewhere around there, scoreless in the Cactus League. He is starting games. But Bob Melvin made the point to mention that Jay Groom might make the team as a long reliever. And I thought that was a really, really interesting nugget to toss out there, because you could just say Jay Groom's going to make the team. And what would we assume, Chris? We'd assume that he'd be the sixth starter for this club, right?
With Joe Musgrove starting the season, not playing? Sure, absolutely.
But let's keep it moving. The Padres have two guys that they're looking at pretty extensively, neither of whom can be on the opening day roster, on the opening day roster for Chihuahua. They either clear waivers or agree to assignment. Those two players are Julio Teheran and Brent Honeywell Jr. And we've seen a good deal of both in Cactus League games. The last couple times out, it's been like two or three really good innings and then a bad inning for Teheran and Honeywell, which happens in spring training. But I thought, Chris, specifically, that Jay Groom long reliever offhand comment, I went, okay, I put this puzzle piece in. Groom slides into the Pomeranz spot. Hill slides up into the impact reliever spot that would have been held by Morihone, and that gives either Tehran or Honeywell a chance, whoever does better, a chance to make the opening day roster as the sixth starter for the team, and that way they don't lose control of that player just yet.
Yeah, precisely, man. Sharp way of looking at it. Jay Groom's got options. He's a young guy, not going anywhere, under club control. Julio Tehran is a lottery scratcher. As you said, looked exciting at some moments, and then today, I may have watched an inning and two-thirds of the game today, and one of those was an off-speed pitch of his getting nuked, you know, left right over the plate. But that's going to happen. You know, small sample size. He has looked sharp at times. But he won't be a Padre unless he is lights out pitching at a mid-rotation major league level for the Padres at the end of spring training. I think Honeywell is a little more likely to take a minor league assignment. That's what my gut tells me.
He has to go to waivers. I think he has to get exposed to the league, whereas Tehran's deal is he has to first be offered the opportunity to drop out and go to free agency.
Got it.
So just whoever does better, right? I think it's as simple as that. But if you're betting tools, Honeywell's got more tools than Tehran because he's got that history that Preller may want to bet on. I happen to think that might be one of the decisions that's coming down the road here in the next 3 weeks for the San Diego Padres. The other one is the battle for the last two outfield spots. And it's actually been pretty interesting. I mean, Adam Engel's had the late entry into this. He's been slow to come back. He's had a little bit of injury. But Azokar and David Dahl have each played pretty darn well, to the point that I would say right now I would expect both of those guys to be on the opening day roster, understanding that Engel has a major league contract and Azokar has options. And so the simple game would be for Azokar to get punted to AAA based on fungibility. But right now, from playability, Dahl and Azokar look like the two.
Azokar hasn't lost a step off of a pretty eye-opening rookie campaign. You know, the guy proved that he can have quality at-bats at the major league level whenever he goes up. He did hit his first home run, which was thrilling, in spring training. But Adam Engel is about the same offensively. So it feels to me, if you're keeping the better player, you're probably keeping Jose Azokar at this point. That's kind of where I go with it. The Adam Engel thing has always been kind of a little bit of a mystery to me, because the Padres outfield, aside from Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis, are, you know, defensive first guys. David Dahl is the outsider. He's the one that's different. He's the one that brings, you know, other value than just a solid defender.
I agree. I'm honestly, in retrospect, I don't understand the Adam Engel signing.
Yeah, it kind of felt that way at the time. It's like you think Jose Azokar is going to be worse than he was, because Adam Engel's never hit better than Jose Azokar. I know Engel is a really, really good defender, and Jose has had his moments of looking a little, I don't want to say lost, but maybe a little confused. But he's been solid most of the time.
Yeah. It'll be fun to watch. Last thing, just World Baseball Classic update. Dominican bounces back, Padre powered today for a win in Miami. I mean, my God, Juan Soto looks good. Juan Soto went second deck, threw out a base runner. Everything he's doing, he looks incredible. I don't know anyone more primed to win something, batting title, MVP, championship, hopefully all of it, than Juan Soto.
Dude, we all see it. He has got the eye of the tiger, leaves the Padres hitting 727. every at bat I've seen of him in the WBC has just been exhilarating. He hit into a double play today that, you know, was an at bat that he was in ownership the entire time and just got unlucky by roping one to the first baseman with Luis Arraez 10 feet off the bag. You know, no shot. Just it's over. Talk about people that we that could get expensive really fast.
Yeah, no, it's true. And Ha-Sung Kim, grand slam. Korea still trying to hang in there, scoring so many runs. I think you saw Xander Bogaerts' club, Netherlands, got eliminated based on all five teams getting into a tiebreaker where it was runs scored divided by outs. So, like, we're using maths.
Yeah, too much. We're using maths.
Where's a home run derby?
That's doing it. The maths. Yeah, let's get all five teams to a stadium and have a home run derby to figure it out. I don't like it. It feels yuck. Or play more games or something.
Yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, bummer. Xander's back. Good news for the Padres. Xander's back.
Sure, and it looks like we're about to get Ha-Sung, too, and probably Nabil Chrismat, not Jorge Alfaro. He's not coming back, guys. I'm sorry.
He'll never come.
Not coming.
It's so beautiful. I mean, you see him in the dugout, and you're just like, oh, my God. I remember what we had.
It's a shame. Like, I think he has a little bit of Jake Taylor, you know, going on with his knees. You can't rely on him to be a backup, even though Luis Camposano is nursing a hamstring injury too.
Has he done an LFGC? Like, I just want to know. Like, has he done that? Because he should have done that. If he hasn't done that, he should have done that.
No, he's got to have new bits.
No, I think he should. Chris, I think he should just show up and stand in the middle of the room and go, are we having fun yet? Just see how it goes. If you know, you know. Okay. This is where you can add the spot break, Rafe, for the non-patrons. Patrons, listen on, ad-free. It's time for the Pessimism Podcast. It's time for worst-case scenarios. It's time for Jorge Alfaro cards, man. You're just gonna hang on to that for like sentimental value. That's got no actual physical value.
No, that's from this year's set. It's, you know, he was already gone when I bought that.
What a shame. It's like taunting you, finding that when you open your card pack. Nonetheless, it's time for the Pessimism Podcast. It's time for us to talk about what could go wrong for the San Diego Padres. Now, listen, this isn't just to basically tickle Tevin McReynolds' pleasure centers, which is otherwise what this podcast is for.
Are we going to do some ASMR of like, Xander Bogaerts goes to his right, but he can't make the throw in time. And Josh Rojas slides in head first to first base, safe.
All four to McCarthy. And it's just another walk for the amazingly sharp-looking Diamondbacks. God, they look good today. That Corbin Carroll's hair looks amazing. He's young and he's beautiful, and he was signed to an aggressive contract. Why doesn't our team do that?
This is not the Diamondbacks' cold bath. The Padres' hot tub. Tevin.
That's correct. So, no, we don't do it for that reason. We don't do it. For that, we do this each year to set our floor, right? We try and set a floor, a ceiling, and then at the end of it, try and figure out where we want to land. How close to the floor? How close to the ceiling? Do we want to go into the middle? What do we want to do? This is the most exciting and consequential year in the history of the San Diego Padres. So what could go wrong? It's not a bad thought experiment to have. I'll open the floor first to you, my friend. Chris, I've personally identified some variables. Eventually, we'll each give a number. We'll give a floor number. But what are some of the things you're looking at here?
All right. Well, now I'm going to have you close your eyes, Craig. It's the middle of September. No, it's got to be earlier. It's like the middle of June. sun's hot in the morning as you wake up. You and I, we meet up together early on the beaches of San Diego, and we jog on the beaches of Silver Strand, and then we go for a nice cold swim. After that,
you're really weird. I'm already out, but okay.
We head to the Gas Lamp, where we have oysters and IPA. It's Sunday, so it's an afternoon game. We head through Petco Park. And right as you get your tray of nachos, a seagull takes it from you, Craig.
God dang it.
Flies away. It's gone. You see the lineup card and Trent Grisham's not playing. It's a left-handed pitcher they're facing, and they want Fernando Tatis in center field. The second inning, some dipshit hits a high fly ball in between him and Juan Soto, and Soto tries to call him off. But Tatis keeps coming, young athleticism, like a freight train in the outfield. And smack, two bodies meet. Two Padres sluggers lay in a heap on the floor. The stunned silence of the crowd. It's just children screaming. That's where I go, Craig. That's the absolute worst case scenario for us this year. Something horrific. Something unplanned, unforeseen, unguessable, because otherwise, this is the best roster in Padres history. Ownership's done everything they possibly can to get us to this point. So, short of any scenario that starts off with us jogging together in the morning.
Yeah. And then the oysters, the jogging, the oysters, the morning meeting. I was out on this from the second you began it.
Because it wasn't real. It's not going to happen.
Okay.
It's the doomsday scenario.
All right. I'm going to tell you that I can see, I'm not saying this is going to happen, I can see more cracks in this armor. Imagine your scenario, but the pitch that was thrown, that was hit up in the air, was thrown by Ryan Weathers.
Yeah.
Okay. There are certain things I think the Padres have built into this club for 2023 that should be extraordinarily stable. All right. I think the left side of the infield should be extraordinarily stable. I feel like Manny Machado and Xander Bogaerts, even if Xander Bogaerts doesn't have the green monster to hit off of, these guys are going to hit for a good average. They're going to play good defense. They're going to hit for some power. They're going to drive in runs. They're all around professional ball players. I think that there's nothing you need to worry about with these guys. Juan Soto is set to have a breakout year. Could Juan Soto get injured? Sure. But if we want to just do a worst case scenario where we say everyone gets injured, like that could happen to any team. That's not analysis. That's just, you know, right. Everyone could get injured. But I think Juan Soto is like a constant. Right. In the universe, I'm not worried about his production. For the most part, the starting pitchers the Padres have assembled, we've got a body of work for these gentlemen. As long as they aren't hurt, I think we know what Yu Darvish and Blake Snell and Joe Musgrove are going to be to any extent. So here are the variables that I look at that I think are going to swing this team from their middle to their top to their bottom projections. Okay. And if you take these dials and you turn them all the wrong way, you can get to the floor, in my opinion. All right. Number one is the most obvious one. What's the number one variable for 2023, Chris?
The number one variable in terms of Major League Baseball, period.
San Diego Padres.
San Diego Padres, probably Fernando Tatis Jr.
It's Fernando Tatis Jr. Fernando Tatis Jr. is the number one variable for this team, for any team. Fernando Tatis Jr. could be the MVP of the National League.
Sure.
And that would be a completely reasonable result. He could come back. He could hit 300. He could go 40-40. He could throw out 15 guys. In the outfield, he could be the best player in the league on the best team in the league. And that is very much possible. Fernando Tatis Jr. also could struggle on defense, struggle at the plate, struggle with his power, get out of his zone because he's trying to overcompensate, get into his head because he's being mercilessly booed in his NL West road matches and it's starting to frustrate him, get overly into a dark cloud because he's supposed to be the man and now he's looking around and Juan Soto's the man, Manny's the man, Xander's the man, everyone's the man except for Fernando. And he's lost control of the franchise that he had in the palm of his hands. All of these things could happen to Fernando Tatis Jr. or somewhere in the middle where he's a happy soldier, goes through the whole year, loses some of his power, keeps his speed, struggles, he's in and out, inconsistent. If I told you that any one of these things happened, Chris, would you be necessarily surprised?
Oh, no, I think the only thing that would be truly stunning Fernando Tatis Jr. is if he somehow didn't play this year. That's the only thing that would blow me away, because he could strike out more. I don't see his power going away. The dude's got a swing of friggin' Achilles. It's just whether the timing comes back, whether the pitch recognition comes back the same. He was already a little strikeout prone, but was so dangerous that pitchers, you know, couldn't afford to nibble and make a mistake up on him. If they start seeing that not be as dangerous, maybe they're attacking him off the plate more and he's being aggressive, you know, chasing ambitions that aren't coming to pass. But and then, all you know, it could go any way. The only thing that would surprise me is he wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not going to throw that into the mix. He either suffers another catastrophic injury or takes another suspension or whatever.
Yeah.
Falls off another dirt bike. Like, you know, we're not going to even mix that in. I think the baseball outcomes are a wild variable unto themselves. Now, I lean toward the upper end of the variables. I lean toward Fernando Tatis Jr. has a readjustment period and then maybe from May 15th or June 1st to the end of the year, he's the best player in the league. Like, that to me is something that could very easily happen. But no one else in the league has a player like Fernando Tatis Jr. on their team. Someone who is young, long-term committed, coming off of a season of entire negatives, a season of completely not playing, preceded by a season of wild highs and lows, and really just he's the star that the straw that stirs the drink here. He's the Reggie Jackson of the team. So my number one variable for this team this year is Fernando Tatis Jr. For the purpose of a pessimism podcast, it would be a Fernando Tatis Jr. that combines poor defense in the outfield with a lack of power with a loss of his plate discipline because he is trying to overcompensate for everything else. So you wind up with a player who hits for kind of a middling average with some speed, bad defense, and not as much power as you expect, and getting booed and being slightly dysfunctional. That would be the worst case scenario to me for Fernando.
I know you don't want to, you know, stay on the injury thing, but Fernando is a guy who plays with reckless abandon and has a hard time playing 80 to 90% of his games under best of circumstances.
Sure.
So if the Padres are only getting 70, 80 games of Fernando Tatis Jr., that is in this scenario, in the pessimism thing. That and I think that's a higher percentage than you 40-40 guy. You know, if we're doing the Fangraphs 50th percentile projection, I think Fernando playing 73 games is about right.
That would be devastating because really Fernando Tatis Jr. is baked into this team this year. There is no Jurickson Profar. Now, if you want to go sign Jurickson Profar to be a long-term backup plan, then 70 games of Fernando Tatis Jr., Padres could probably fade that. every day that he goes unsigned, you kind of wonder. He wound up only hitting 230 for Team Netherlands, which is really what Jerkson Profar is.
He's always been who he is.
Yeah. So, you know, that is what it is. But yeah. Now, next for me on variables is Trent Grisham. Trent Grisham is a player who could hit for 25 home runs with 25 steals, playing his third Gold Glove center field, hitting 235, 245, 255, and could be one of the best players on the Padres. Trent Grisham could also lose his starting job to Fernando Tatis Jr. And be out and like be off the team or off the bench by midseason, because the Padres can't afford. Can they afford? I don't know. They've built a deep lineup, but if Grisham is going to be striking out, looking, leading the league in caught looking Ks, completely lost at the plate. You know, there were long parts of last year, where it looked like Trent Grisham literally could not handle a major league fastball, and that baseball had come up with the simplest, you know, get him out scenario in the world, which is he's going to take everything to two strikes. So, you know, nibble, hit the corner. It's fine. And then once you get to two strikes, it's a fastball in the upper half of the zone and he's going to swing through it or miss it, you know, 9 times out of 10. If that continues, Trent Grisham will be out of this league in 2 or 3 years. He'll be on a different team next year, and Padres are going to have a real problem in the outfield, and it's in the range of scenarios.
Well, you said a key to Trent Grisham's success this year when you talked about losing his job to Fernando Tatis Jr. He is on the tracks, and there's a train coming, and Tatis has made it abundantly clear he doesn't want to be a periphery star. He wants to be in the middle of the action. This time, literally, he wants to be in center field. He said that out loud. Trent Grisham is a guy whose success largely depends, at least to my eyes, on his confidence level, on his headspace. How, you know, does he have the swag? Does he believe in himself when he steps into the batter's box? When he does, the dude has the tools to bat leadoff for the team. He has the tools to be a $25 million a year player. But when he's not in that headspace, like you say, when he's in those ruts, like he was for a month, you know, 5 weeks at a time last year, he's going to lose his job. And then, yeah, I don't think if he loses his job to the Tatis, he even stays on the team through the season. I do think he is an extremely valuable defensive center fielder. That's something at a premium throughout the league. There's going to be teams that don't have that come the deadline time. And if Tatis Jr. has successfully transitioned to center field and he's not losing balls and his route running has smoothed out and he's getting there quicker, he's got the athleticism to get anywhere on the field. The Padres are starting to build some depth in the outfield, like we talked about with Azokar and Angle and David Dahl. You can put any one of those guys on the corners. You can put Matt Carpenter on the corner. You can put him in right. You can put David Dahl in right. His position on the team becomes tenable. But the team looks a lot better with a 3-5 WAR Trent Grisham.
Absolutely. Let's talk about catcher. I mean, I'm going to obvious places on this team. We know where the certainties are on the San Diego Padres. At catcher, you've got a guy in Austin Nola who at one point in his career has hit 300 with a little bit of power, who the pitchers definitely like to throw to, but has a real hard time throwing anybody out. And that's before they went to pizza box sized bases.
With the pitch clock.
Then you've got Luis Camposano. And we've dreamed on Luis Camposano for 2-3 seasons now, knowing that this is a kid that's coming, hearing that he could win a batting title, that, you know, he in 2023 could be the starting catcher for the Padres. And here it is, 2023, and he could be the starting catcher for the San Diego Padres. But I don't think anyone can say one way or another for sure what the heck you're going to get from Luis Camposano. Could you get a year where he hit 280 and hit a dozen home runs and was a consistent offensive presence? Absolutely. You could even get maybe better than that, possibly, but you could also get Luis Camposano can't do it. Can't hit, doesn't, whether he can or can't, doesn't hit for average, doesn't hit for power, doesn't connect with the pitchers, and is gone for a replacement level alternative down the road. Austin Nola could just be what we saw last year, which is a guy who hits in the 240s, and it's a single, or it's a walk, or it's a feeble flyout, or maybe a ground ball, and that's all that there is. There's no doubles, there's no homers, there's no slug. It's just kind of an empty, empty at bat at the bottom of your lineup, and I feel like that outcome absolutely is in play for Austin Nola, who's got more ticks on the negative ledger of his career than he has on the positive side.
For sure, dude, and not to bring it back and harp on that, you know, that always present variable, but we talked about this last week or the week before. Austin Nola has one full season under his belt, and it was last year. Otherwise, he's been plagued by injuries. So if your backup is Luis Camposano, who is not adapting to the major leagues, who's hitting 166, slugging, you know, 310, you're gonna be in a lot of trouble at a position that is kind of a, kind of like a fulcrum with all these new rules. The catching position has always been probably the hardest of the position players. It's not getting easier. You trust Austin Nola for his head, for his savvy. You want to put your money on Luis Camposano for the tools and for the potential. And man, we talked about it last week. Do the Padres catchers suck? They, of all the positions, they're the only one that you could say maybe. I really think of all the groups, infield doesn't suck, no chance. Outfield doesn't suck. Juan Soto's out there.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible that this is a group that really struggles for San Diego, a position group that struggles for San Diego. And it's something you have to consider and bake into a worst-case scenario, right? So what if Fernando Tatis Jr. is really a struggle bus? The catching position doesn't wash out. It turns out Grisham isn't a Major League Baseball player. I really think the jury's out, you know, despite what's in your shoebox. The Schrodinger shoebox.
I don't think the evidence there. The guy had a rough year last year and still was in the upper two-thirds of Major League Baseball center fielders. There are 20 teams that would take Trent Grisham as their center field, knowing they have to plug him in the 8-hole and he's going to hit 15 home runs and bat 200. I think Padres fans need a place to put their anxieties and their frustrations when there's a team of guys, of dudes out there doing it. But Trent Grisham can be a dude. He has been a dude.
Let me get to the next one on my list. The Padres have to make decisions. When they spend so much at certain positions, they have to take some gambles. They've taken two big gambles at the DH spot for 2023. And rolling craps out on both of these gambles has to be considered a real possibility, okay? Nelson Cruz could be completely cooked. Like, at 42 on 43?
Yeah, dude.
What are the odds he's not completely cooked?
When you're the general manager of your WBC, it brings a whole different dimension to where you're at in your career.
I mean, yes, LASIK surgery, great. All three of us are wearing glasses here on this show. Like, I guess we have to respect the hustle, but I've heard every excuse for an old ball player. At some point, you lose it. Nelson Cruz has had it for the longest time of almost anybody. You have to think that it's not impossible. They signed him to a $1 million deal. That's the bet that AJ was willing to put.
Yeah, it's the same deal they gave Adam Engel, for comparison's sake.
Absolutely. So Nelson Cruz could be cooked. We hope he's not. Matt Carpenter could be cooked too. Like, don't forget, for 3 years, Matt Carpenter was hitting like the worst version of Max Muncy. You know, hitting under 200 with some walks and maybe occasional power. And really just a cipher of strikeouts over and over again. It led to him leaving the team that he was like long-term blood committed to.
Part of the identity.
Right. It led to him being on the Texas Rangers AAA team getting cut last year. This is May of last year that Matt Carpenter was cut from the Rangers AAA team.
Oh.
Okay? Now, go read the Athletic story. He worked on retooling his swing. There is a narrative that you can tell. There's an anecdote that you can tell that Matt Carpenter went up the mountain and found the shaman and came down with the tablet and figured it all out, and now he is reincarnate for the end of his career. Or he could have gone to Yankee Stadium and pulled 15 homers into a short porch in a month and a half, and then broken his foot right at the moment that he was about to put up the 2-for-50 that would have ended any thought of him being committed to from another team. If you'd like to go look up what he did in the playoffs when he came back last year, I believe it was 2-for-12 with 9 strikeouts. It might have been 1-for-12 with 9 strikeouts. Like, he came back and did absolutely nothing for the New York Yankees at the end of the year. So I'm not wishing, I'm not saying this is the case. I'm saying you have to consider the possibility that in June, the Padres DH is David Dahl.
Mm.
Okay? Because Big Boy couldn't hit, and the other guy couldn't, Nelly couldn't hit, and Carpenter is done. And these guys are old, and they're just done. And you know, we're waiting for them, and in April we say, don't worry, and in May we go, we're worried, and June, David Dahl's the DH.
I think you might have mentioned maybe Adam Engel as the Jurickson Profar, either or you know, Tatis out there. Matt Carpenter took Jurickson Profar's spot on this team.
Yeah.
And they are opposites in many ways. Jurickson, you almost know exactly what you were going to get. And it's, you know, if you're taking him in our fantasy keeper league, he wouldn't be till the last round if taken at all. Matt Carpenter has that upside that you want to chase. You know, the dude was absolutely insane with a bat in his hand during the regular season for the Yankees last year. Insane. A .1 OPS. You know, just a weapon, and really carried that team throughout some times when they weren't so hot. They started off really hot, then they had some struggles. Carpenter helped out a lot then, and when they lost him, They had a late season collapse, the Yankees. They were in a lot of trouble going to the playoffs, and they were looking forward to getting him back. And when he couldn't deliver, it sank them. The Yankees were toothless in the ALCS. Padres don't want to be there. You've been high on Dahl since the beginning, Craig. I'll give you credit. You saw it. You saw the former All-Star. It's a good backstop to have. If you're banking on Nelly Cruz and Matt Carpenter.
Yeah, but he's a replacement level player at this point. So, you know, if in June the Padres have a replacement level player as their DH, it's an issue. We discussed in the first half of the podcast, Joe Musgrove. Pitching injuries are always a thing. I don't like to really throw that in, but the fact that your ace-ish or your number two or however you want to put it is pushing himself back as fast as possible on an impact joint in his body for any pitcher's delivery, it is a concern. And the worst version of this Padres team loses the top of their rotation, right? Darvish struggles coming back from the WBC. Snell is not career year Blake Snell. He's Blake Snell and misses 2 months because he's Blake Snell. Joe Musgrove comes back and gets hurt, and all of a sudden you're looking at a Martinez, Lugo, Groom, DeRon,
Weathers.
Right. Yeah. Right. Maybe you let go DeRon, or maybe you kept Honeywell and you've got Honeywell starting. And it's a damn weird rotation, right? Like it's a weird kind of muggy rotation. That's not impossible.
It's kind of like a ship. And I think all over the roster, the Padres have watertight compartments throughout. But if their number one and two starting pitcher compartments get flooding, ship's going down. Shohei Ohtani's excusing himself from the WBC a couple games early. He's going to miss the semis and the finals. You got to think that means it's more likely that Yu Darvish pitches in a final for Team Japan. Something he ain't going to take lightly. These don't have to be knockout, shoulder, blowout injuries. Part of thinking about where this season could go, I did some research of disappointing teams. You know, the 2008 Padres are on there. I thought the 2003 Diamondbacks were fascinating because both Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson, one Hall of Famer and one head. they were just kind of nagging injuries throughout the whole season, so they didn't get, I think they got a combined 40 starts out of both of them, and that wasn't a team Schilling and Johnson. If that happens to the Padres, I'm sorry guys, that's 10 games that they probably lose because it's Ryan Weathers or Reese Kinnear trying to get through four innings and then get to our bullpen, which I'm not worried about at all, I should say.
Yeah.
But the top of
us brought it up.
Yeah, man. I think that's a pretty talk about watertight. But yeah, if those one and two compartments get flooded, we're not a seaworthy team at that moment. I mean, who is? I mean, who really? Right. How many franchises are backstopped so that they can lose one and two and count them on a hand? But we're not one of them.
And the very last thing I have on my variables list is the fact that we are a team filled with a defensive shuffle. Our starting shortstop is in the outfield. Our starting second baseman is at first base. Our other starting shortstop is at second base to make room for a third starting shortstop who is jumping in, for the first time. Our right fielder is moving to left field. We're integrating a rookie catcher into the mix. There's a lot of defensive variability, and we are expecting this to roll perfect. We're expecting Kim to maintain 100% of his defense at second. We're expecting Cronenworth to maintain 100% of his defense at first, for Bogarts to step in and be great, for Soto to flip to left, no problem, and for Tatis to jump into the outfield and be good. But Tatis has yet to be good as a major league outfielder. Very small sample size. Understandable. Nonetheless, he was not a good defensive outfielder in 2021. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. He was a Strat-O-Matic 4 with a high error. Like he was not good. And the defensive shuffle for this team could be an irritant because we're going to be theoretically in an environment of more run scoring and more balls getting through the infield.
That's an excellent point, dude. I want to add to it. Supplement it. Moving guys around doesn't have just consequences on their defense. It has consequences at the plate too. If Jake Cronenworth is pissed off at his first baseman's mitt because it's too hard and he just biffed one that should have ending the inning, and now a couple of runs get across and he's due up and the Padres are chasing the Dodgers by two, you think that at bat's going to be as effective as it would otherwise? No, if Fernando Tatis is pissed because or embarrassed because he got heckled after losing one in the sun, he's not going to be as confident and swaggy, and the Padres will be chasing runs because of the bad defense. So, yeah, the inconsistent defense on the field is a concern with this planned strategy of utilizing guys' versatility. But the drawback can also be at offense. They're bringing up Max Muncy again. I think Max Muncy got derailed by becoming a second baseman and a third baseman. I think if he's playing Freddie Freeman's position, the dude's probably his best version of himself. And I hope the Padres don't see that happen with Jake Cronenworth or Ha-Seong Kim or Fernando Tatis, you know?
All right, so for me, this is my list at which the thought experiment gets to its natural conclusion for a pick. But before we each offer a pick to wrap up this show, is there anything else you'd like to add to the list, Chris or Rafe?
Go ahead, Rafe.
Well, just to add on to the last point you guys were making, affecting their defense, affecting their offense, just affecting their strategic value. You know, moving Cronenworth to first base zaps his value. We talked about that on Pods Above Replacement. It's a projection of a 1.2 WAR reduction just by moving him over. So that's one question for me. Second question for me. Ha-Seong Kim took huge leaps and bounds offensively last year. And, you know, I'd like to think that those bounds are solid. But could there be some regression? Is he the guy who hits 250 or is he the guy that hits 200? And mind you, he got a lot of his value last year out of being the bat that he was while playing shortstop. Moving him over to second base, he is less valuable. So we are zapping the value of these guys by moving them out of their natural positions, which could bite us in the ass, you know? So that's one. A couple of things I wanted to come back to. You mentioned pitching injury. One thing you didn't mention is pitching mechanics. So Joe Musgrove, you know, he might not be hurt, but he's throwing funky because of this toe thing. And all of a sudden, your 3.5 ERA pitcher is throwing a 4.25 season because he's got some weird run on his fastball that you didn't used to be there. And it doesn't rise as much as it does. It's sure. Little things like that kind of worry me. I know you said you're not worried about the bullpen. Listen. This is the Jewish worry pastime of my people, but like Josh Hader's arm slot was messed up for like 2 months last year. And there was a whole thing where it's like, is Josh Hader broken? I don't know. Like, and it wound up being okay. And he wound up finding his form, but like, that's not a sure thing, especially when the guy doesn't have the stamina that he used to have. And going into his free agency year, he's not going to be, you know, I think is willing to go further into games that would potentially see his numbers rise. I hate to bring this up because I love the dude, but like we took a really big bet on Robert Suarez and we took a really big bet on Robert Suarez off of like 50 innings, you know, because he missed a lot of the year like last year. And I'd love to think he's the eighth inning guy, the, you know, the Heath Bell to Trevor Hoffman's Hader, you know, that's just going to come in and, you know, the gates, oh, we're up with a lead after 7 innings, game's over. You know, I'd like to think that. But I don't know, a small sample size. And that's not just a bad case scenario for this year. This is a 5-year commitment this team has made to Robert Suarez.
Right.
So I think, you know,
that's a complicated contract, though, isn't it? Isn't it really a 3-year, 330?
I think it's his options, though. I think it's Suarez's options. So
don't they trigger off of innings or something?
It's something like that. It's a 3-year commitment at the very least. But So I would just say the bullpen is already starting to thin out in little bits and pieces. So if we have a mechanical issue here, you know, again, we want to take injury out of the picture because it could be there. But I think that the bullpen is probably the strongest, most, you know, it's the surest bet of the team, but it's not airtight, in my opinion.
I think you really hit on something with the regression argument. You know, you could do it to Ha-Seong and Jake. Both of those guys losing 10-15%, you know, just kind of having slightly off years. It means fewer guys on the bases for when the lineup turns around. And you know, that's what they're counting on. They're counting on runs coming across the plate. So yeah, dude.
Okay, with all of this, it's time to lay in our floor predictions, our worst case scenario predictions. So, Chris, the collision, anything else that I said, anything Rafe said, add it up, mix it in a bowl, pour it out. What do you have? What's your floor worst case prediction for this year's Padres baseball team?
All right, dude. So the Padres last year won 89 games. They performed well against their division. They got guys good when it mattered at the end. You know, they made the playoffs comfortably at 89. To be straight, there's no way I'm going to be disappointed at the end of this season just for how hard they've committed. But they could find themselves at a scary place at the deadline with underperformance and trying to fill holes at the deadline. They're trying to find a DH. Maybe they're trying to, you know, maybe Cronenworth hasn't been that offensive as a first baseman. They're going to try to figure out something different there. And then they unload guys that are going to be important when they need to cut costs in 4 years. So my worst case pessimistic scenario is the Padres lose 4 or 5 games off of that. And they're at about 80, 86, 85 wins. This isn't a 500 team. This isn't a sub 500 team, barring catastrophe. And I'm not going to count on catastrophe. Catastrophe happens throughout the league to everyone. But yeah, man, that's my worst case. 85 wins. And then you're a borderline wild card team. Then you're duking it out in a time you don't want to be.
Well, I hate you for going first. because not only is my floor for this team 85 wins, which was the number I was walking into this podcast with, 85 wins, but also my worst case scenario involved making a double down trade at the deadline to fill a hole for middling performance that massively impacts the Padres down the road. So we trade Jackson Merrill to get another third starter because the injuries have cascaded, or to get a different second baseman, or whatever, you know, whatever the case, another outfielder, whatever the case might be, that we wind up, you know, cutting ourselves off in the future in order to continue to keep the flame alive this year for a team that ultimately falls short because it rallies just to get that sixth seed, you know, as
a 2020 scenario. It's the 2020 scenario where you get Clevinger, you get Nola, and all of a sudden your organizational depth is gone.
Right. And all those guys, all the Naylors and Quantrills and everyone else that could have, you know, filled holes are on other rosters. And this time we already sent all those guys to Washington for Juan Soto. So now we're sending the next group of guys and it really becomes a negative impact. So, yeah. Wow. We literally agreed 85 and 78 is what we look at as the worst case scenario for the Padres. This is a team that spent a whole decade winning between 72 and 77 games. And we're looking at 85 as being the floor for this club.
That's why I'll embrace the pessimism, but I don't think I can embrace disappointment for this season. I can't say regardless of what happens, you know, because chaos, but the team is moving in the right direction. Ownership is invested. It's clear they want the friggin' parade. And at the bare minimum, we're going to be fighting for a ticket to the contest at the end.
Well, next week, prepare for a completely different version of ourselves.
I can't wait.
As we do our best case scenario podcast, the optimism podcast, the helium podcast, the podcast in which everyone's on the rise and everything is coming up Milhouse, and it is just amazing. So that is next week, along with another week of WBC results. And don't forget, for our patrons, we'll be recording another episode of Group Therapy at the end of this week, Thursday or Friday, which we'll be doing on our Discord stage live in front of our patrons. So sign up, patreon.com/PadresHotTub, patreon.com/PadresHotTub. When we get into the season, just 3 weeks from now, It's going to be post-game shows. We'll be doing live shows at the end of games. Not every single game, but we'll be doing live shows at the end of games, usually one per series, if not more. So stay tuned. Get in. Dive in. Patreon.com/PadresHotTub. Until then, for Rafe, for Chris, I'm Craig. Be well. Go Padres.